and episode number 27 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, brought to you by what else? The 27 world championships that our Yankees have.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
And yes, welcome to episode number 27 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Thanks for finding us wherever you found us. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe where you did so. And don't forget, you can follow us on social media, at Pinstripe Lanes. I'm at Ralphie Aversa. If you were following this past week, you saw that we had some new access to Yankee Stadium and visited some new parts of the stadium that in the 10 years since it opened, we had never been in. Namely, the press conference area and NYY Steak. I'm going to save the entire story for probably next week or the week after's podcast, and we'll have our buddy Eric Lipkind on, who is been a season ticket holder for over two decades. And let me tell you something. The Yankees like to take care of their season ticket holders, especially those who have been so for over two decades, and especially so if your name is Mr. Eric Lipkind. Boy, we got the VIP Royal red carpet treatment the other night for the rain delay Yankee win against the Rays. It was last night. Yankees trying to sweep their division foes right now as we tape this on Wednesday afternoon. But a big thank you to Eric for inviting us along as his plus one. And yeah, we had a great time. Again, you can see some of it on Twitter and Instagram at Pinstripe Lanes. And in the next week or two, we'll do a full recap of our visit to the pregame press conference with Aaron Boone and Giancarlo Stanton, and our visit to NYY Steak as well. A couple other things here before we get into this week's guest, and we got a great one for you. He was on last year, one of our best as far as feedback, and as far as listens for that matter as well. One of our best episodes last year was with the Yes Network's Jack Curry. He's back this time around, and we'll chat about the book that, of course, he wrote with David Cone, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. Want to send get well wishes out to Big Poppy, David Ortiz. I believe it was episode, what episode was it? Hold on, let me pull up our list here. I believe it was episode number 8. No, I'm sorry. Episode number 19 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. We had a secret surprise guest talking about Frank Sinatra's New York, New York. And that was David Ortiz from our chat with him actually in the Dominican Republic last fall at his Celebrity Golf Classic, which benefits his fund. His fund, by the way, tries to help kids with heart disease, both in the Dominican Republic and back in Boston. I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of the story because it's unfolding every 5 seconds and I still don't have a full grasp on it. But needless to say, when the news first broke, I was extremely shocked and saddened. And I'm just praying that Big Poppy makes a full recovery. Sometimes you got to put the rivalry and these sports things aside. You got to remember that it is just a game. And again, after having met him a couple times and really being his guest down in the Dominican Republic and knowing how much he loves baseball and loves people, loves kids and loves that country, really saddened by the actions that unfolded. So we're praying for him and for his family and friends as well. Other news and notes, I have added threefold to my Yankee hat collection, which I did not need to add to at all, but I did nonetheless. Here's what happened. Cap day last night, I totally forgot. So I got my first free Navy Yankee cap from the ballpark since the new ballpark opened, actually. I've been to a couple of the Budweiser camo cap days, but not one of the regular ones because normally they're during the week and I had to work. So it's been over a decade since the old stadium, but got my new Canon one and will not be making the mistake that I made with those other caps and giving them away to other people. If there were to be a giveaway, though, don't worry, it would be right here through the podcast. Also, from our friends at affordablejerseys.com, great website, by the way, if you haven't checked it out, for Yankees merch. I bought one of the unstructured Mariano dad hats, navy hat, the strap on the back, and then the raised embroidered 42 on the front. I'll wear that Hall of Fame weekend. Going to be going to the induction with some friends. Looking forward to that. Big thank you, by the way, to our buddy John Sheshatovsky. If you missed him last season and you're going to Cooperstown for the Mo induction, go back and listen to that podcast. A lot of gems in there. He helped me out on the side with some other questions that we had. So thank you to John for that. The third Yankee hat I got this past week came from Modell's. I went to the Modell's Sunday on 34th and 7th. Because I was popping into Penn Station to head out east with the girlfriend for Father's Day. Her dad and her brother are Mets fans. We don't hold that against them. Nonetheless, I didn't want to show up empty-handed, and so I grabbed a Mets hat for her dad. And Mo's was doing a special. I think they still are. Buy one, get one half off. And so I was buying the Mets hat already. I'm like, oh, might as well buy a Yankees hat. So I got a 47 brand unstructured Navy Yankees hat. This is rare for me because I normally don't stray from New Era. New Era, of course, in addition to being the on-field provider for the Yankees and for MLB, is a Buffalo-based company. I'm originally from Western New York, so I like to support them. 47 brand, while they do make great apparel, and I've bought and worn their apparel in the past, they're actually based in Boston, and their first big athletic affiliation was with the Red Sox. Obviously, they've expanded to other leagues and other teams since. But I bought the 47 brand hat. Navy with the white NY. It's a little lighter navy. It's more of like a worn look, so you can't really pair it with a lot of the other Yankee merchandise, at least that I have, but it's still cool. It's got the American flag, a big American flag embroidered on one side, 47 brand logo on the other. Again, it's a strap fit. It's a nice hat, and I got it for about half off, 12, 13 bucks, so not too shabby. Thank you to Modell's. Gotta go to Mo's, oh yeah, for that. All right, no more singing. Let's get to our guest this week, because he gives us another great spot for a second straight season, the incomparable Yes Network analyst and co-author of the book Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher with David Cone, Mr. Jack Curry. Joining us this week, next, right here on the Pinstripe Plains Podcast. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Plains Podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. All right, if you're listening to the podcast, you're probably a Yankees fan, and I'm sure by now you know about the book, New York Times bestseller, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, David Cone with Jack Curry, Grand Central Publishing. For those keeping count, this is not the first time Jack has co-authored a book with a Yankee. In 2000, he wrote The Life You Imagine, Life Lessons for Achieving Your Dreams with Derek Jeter. Jack spent nearly 20 years covering the Yankees and MLB at the New York Times before joining the Yes Network in February of 2010. He's a five-time New York Emmy Award winner as he enters his 10th season with Yes. A graduate of Fordham, a big music fan, and an avid runner, Jack is kind enough to join us on the Pinstripe Plains podcast for the second time. Hi, Jack. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Hey, Ralphie. Thanks for having me, and thanks for laying out the resume better than some of my closest friends could. I appreciate that. You ran the gamut there.
Yeah, well, obviously, when we chatted last year on the podcast, it was kind of more an overarching conversation about your career and making the transition from print to television and so on. With this, the focus has been, it will be a lot about this book, and I know you've done a lot of media for it as well. I was curious, when the book was first announced and the promo ramped up, the timing around it. Was it simply that this is the 20th anniversary of Coney's perfect game, or was there something else about the timing of the book for this summer?
Yeah, you're right, Ralphie. We did want to coincide with as close to the perfect game as possible, but we didn't want to come out in July as the baseball season is kind of already half over. That's when David pitched his perfect game. We were looking to come out sort of hit the Father's Day audience. I know a lot of people said to me, well, why didn't you release your book around opening day, which a lot of baseball books come out. Ours came out in mid-May. Our publisher and our editor, Sean Desmond, who was a great guy to work with, they didn't want to get caught up in the onslaught of books around opening day. They were looking to do something more in mid-May, which then is only about 2 months away from the perfect game, and maybe you can distinguish yourself a little bit more. And quite honestly, you know about deadlines. You're in this business. I also was writing right up until the moment of my deadline of around December 31st. So with mid-May in mind, December 31st was my deadline, and I wrote right up till the final day. To get it out by spring training or earlier, I would have been writing over Christmas dinner. So the timing worked out well for us, I felt.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, did that kind of, I don't want to say mess up your holidays, but maybe alter your holidays at all, where you had to ask for a little patience from family members as you navigated through Thanksgiving and Christmas?
I'd like to say alter is a good word, but alter in a good way. I still was able to celebrate with family and friends, but there would be moments on December 26th, let's say, I'm up in my office for 8 or 9 hours because it was crunch time at that point. And Ralphie, you know David Cone. You've watched him. You've studied him. We had so much information, and that's what it came down to in the end, was just condensing and unfortunately eliminating some stuff. We didn't want to write a 600-page book. This book is about 370 pages. So a lot of it in the end was just getting it down to what we felt were the best stories, the most tellable stories, the best anecdotes, and that became sort of being my own editor. Not that Sean wasn't very helpful. He was. But in the end, I was trying to make sure that we told the best stories possible.
I'm going to actually, on that, jump to a question I was going to ask a little later in our chat here, because you mentioned the amount of information that you had between Coney and yourself. But I was curious how, if at all, your reporting at the Times affected this book.
It helped the book immeasurably. It inspired the book. A lot of people have asked me, what made you want to do this book? And Ralphie, it totally goes back to being a writer at the Times and watching David on the mound and watching the wheels spinning in his mind. I never covered a pitcher who I felt was more creative, more desperate and manic, and more of a thinking man on the mound. Now, there are a lot of thinking man's pitchers, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine. I could go down the list. But for me, it felt as if Cone pitched like a guy who was backed in a corner. And I just had that in my mind at the time, that if I ever did a book on pitching, this is the guy I would want to do it with. So that's the first answer to your question. The second part is, I absolutely went back to my own archives to see things I had written about David and about those 90s Yankees teams, because we have two chapters on the Yankees in this book, and it's a lot of David, but it's a lot of Yankees. Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit, David Wells. There's some great content about Cone and Wells in this book, because they were buddies on the road, and they did some fun and humorous and interesting things, right down to the point that, I mean, the book's been out a while, so it's not as if I'm giving away anything, but they had a clubhouse fight. They had an actual fight in the clubhouse that had never been reported before, so we dig into that as well.
And something I noticed about that story and the story about how they were, you know, travel buddies on the road and had their own hotel suite, and then stuff that happened with Cone really throughout his career, I was not disappointed, but surprised that the language in the book, while it is animated, it's also PG rated. Was there a conscious effort for that or no?
That's a great call by you. And that's probably more about me than it was about David. I think that if I told David I'm going to quote you accurately here, there probably would have been more profanity in the book than there is. I can tell you, I know specifically, there's one expletive in this book. We use the S word once, and it's quoting another player making a comment to David. And I just think, Ralphie, as we were writing this book, and Sean was a big influence, and I'm thinking about the people who might read this book, I don't know that that language, a colorful language, makes the story any better. If there was a 10, 12, or 13-year-old kid who picked up this book, and I'm sure he's heard those words before, but if he wanted to learn about pitching, I guess he didn't want that to be littered all over the pages. I have a feeling that the people who bought this book, knowing who David Cone is, they probably knew that there could have been a bleeping here or a bleeping there, and I just made the decision not to litter the book with that.
This idea of a book really educating the reader on pitching, even though despite the fact that you had covered David and now you work with him as a colleague and you've gotten to know him so well, what did you learn about Cone and pitching through writing this book?
A couple of things, Ralphie. And as you said, spending so much time with him just amplified them to an extent that I wasn't expecting. We actually did 42 interviews for this book. And everyone who knows pitching or knows anything about baseball, we know how important the pitcher-catcher relationship was. To hear David talk about that, to hear him tell me various stories, to see him reliving those moments with both the catchers who he got along with, a.k.a. Joe Girardi, Gary Carter, Charlie O'Brien, And then the catchers he clashed with, Jorge Posada, Doug Mirabelli, Pat Borders for a little while in Toronto, but then they got their act together. It just was amazing to me that, wow, that relationship really dictates everything that is going on. David said things along the lines of that when he was struggling, just a fist pump from a catcher might give him a little burst of energy on the mound. Like, okay, this guy still believes in me. But if that guy had lame body language or that guy was putting down the fingers slowly, David said it creeps into your mind that this guy doesn't believe in me. This guy wants them to go to the bullpen. It's just human nature. That was the first thing. And then the second thing was I kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier, just how desperate, manic, insecure he could be on the mound. And if a guy who won almost 200 games, 5 World Series rings, a Cy Young Award, pitched a perfect game, if he felt like that out there, imagine what it's like to be the journeyman guy who's hanging on in baseball. If David Cone had doubts on the mound, every major league pitcher had doubts on the mound.
I think the highest compliment I could pay the book is that I even now find myself watching the game differently after reading it. And probably the biggest reason is what you just laid out, you know, to relate it to, you know, the current day Yankees. And I love, by the way, in the book, how throughout this book, when you talk about a historical story, you're not afraid to relate it to current day MLB. Watching Gary Sanchez behind the plate, it's more than just blocking balls. I mean, that's one aspect of it, but the idea of a pitcher getting into that routine, that rhythm with the catcher, the signs, and how every pitcher is different, by the way, and Cone talks about in this book, obviously, what he liked and what he didn't like, that I really found absolutely fascinating. As you did all of these interviews with David, Jack, what did he enjoy going back to the most?
He loved talking about his dad, and we get into that in the book early. I think he loved reliving those moments with his father. It's interesting, Ralphie. I remember my parents being involved in my baseball career, and it was basically, open the door, run out and play with your friends. I had an older brother. But David's parents, they didn't want him to be a pitcher right away. He was this little rugrat with 3 older siblings running around, manic, crazed, competitive. And they actually were a little worried about him being a pitcher. They didn't want him to fail. They didn't want him to struggle. So he didn't become a pitcher till he was 9 years old, which I know 9 is still young, but some kids are throwing the ball in the backyard when they're 5 or 6. But once it happened, Ralphie, his father was all in on doing things the right way. This was not, hey, Sonny, let's throw 10 pitches. Oh, and put your finger here and maybe you can flip a few curveballs. His father was a voracious reader and read everything he could find about pitching. He knew that David, because of the family history, wasn't going to grow up to be 6'4 and 240, so he looked for ways to maximize his body strength, and that was the Tom Seaver drop-and-drive delivery. So when we went back and talked about that, I could see the gleam in David's eye about that relationship with his dad and the memories of running across the street and getting on a field and his dad catching him, his dad building a little mound in the backyard. But his dad also disciplining him. When he acted like a punk, his father treated him like a punk. He didn't shake hands with a coach after a Little League game, and his father was got in his face about that and said, that's not the way you behave. So I really enjoyed listening to him go down with those stories about his dad.
I remember after the 2017 season when Joe Girardi was let go as manager, and I forgot, I don't know if this was a Yes Network thing or something else, but I remember Cone was interviewed and they asked if he had any interest, and he kind of half jokingly said, you know, I don't know, I might have a few too many skeletons in the closet. And I had no idea about some of the accusations and allegations that were thrown his way throughout his career, and some of it, of course, is covered in the book. There was one story that I wasn't expecting at all, though. A time in the minors when, I guess you could just say, his body signals for a number 2 on the mound. I gotta know, Jack, did you know about this beforehand, and were you able to keep a straight face when he was recalling it?
I'm going to answer the body question first, but I also did want to reference, and I appreciate you bringing it up. David did have some issues off the field, and we do cover those in the book, and I give David credit for that, because when I approached him to do this, it was about a pitching book, and as we started the pitching journey, we went down a personal journey, and David had some off the field issues. All of them ended up being allegations that were proved false. But he said, no, those need to be in the book. We need to address those. We need to talk about that. So we covered that. So I'm glad you referenced that, because other people brought that up in the interviews, and he always was very willing to discuss that. Regarding his issue on the mound at AA, where he says he had too many cheap burgers and had a gurgling stomach and still decided to go to the mound and pitch that day, was I aware of that? No, I was not. I'm going to go back to our editor, Sean Desmond. We had had a couple of drafts of a specific chapter that we had written, and Sean said, I love these minor league stories. When next time you talk to David, just ask him one last time, does he have any other minor league stories that stand out? And that's when David unveiled that doozy, that he had a moment of lack of control on the mound. And while he was still on the mound, he, as you said, a number two became an issue. And he said he's never pitched so fast. And then, Ralphie, in some of these minor league ballparks, the clubhouse is detached from the stadium. So he had to run down the left field line, go to the clubhouse, and had one pair of uniform pants. So jumped in the shower, took care of his business as best he could, and went back out to the mound in those uniform pants. So, yeah, that probably is a minor league story that no one was expecting.
Oh, that's so funny. Wrap it up here with Jack Curry, who, of course, co-authored the book Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, with David Cone. And Cone mentions that he was even surprised that the boss came out so early in his career in pinstripes and dubbed him Mr. Yankee. Why do you think Mr. Steinbrenner did that as quickly as he did, gave him that title?
Toughness, Ralphie. George Steinbrenner loved pitchers who were tough. I don't even think I included this anecdote in the book, and I should have. There was a moment during the 95 division series where Cone and McDowell, they both felt as if their arms were about to fall off, and they were teasing each other about, you want to get a cortisone shot first, or should I get one? And I included that, I believe, in the book. But then there was a moment where Steinbrenner kind of challenged both of them. And he's just, what about you, Cone? Are you ready to go? What about you, McDowell? We brought you over here. Are you going to come through, or are you going to spit the bit? That was one of George's pet phrases, spit the bit.
Uh-huh.
And I think he appreciated Cone's toughness. When they lost in Game 5 against the Seattle Mariners in 95, and Cone threw 147 pitches and issued a bases-loaded walk on that 147th pitch, Ralphie, I was at that game. I was in that clubhouse. There was not one person who would have had an ounce of criticism to David Cone. There were people who just said, what a warrior, that a guy wanted to stay out there, wanted to try and finish that. And I think that his legacy with George Steinbrenner was embedded at that moment, that this guy was willing to do all he could to try and get them a win. And as we detail in the book, he throws 147 pitches. He can't lift his arm off the airplane armrest on the flight home. He signs a contract with the Yankees, doesn't get a physical because they wanted to make sure they had him signed, sealed, and delivered. Spring training, his fingers start tingling, and then he finds out he's got an aneurysm. So there's a lot to unwrap with that whole situation, but I think George loved him for his toughness.
Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, David Cone with Jack Curry, Grand Central Publishing. I purchased it, by the way. I guess New School. You know what's interesting, by the way? The pricing, it's only like a dollar or two cheaper if you get it on Kindle. And I was like mad at myself that I didn't just run out to Barnes & Noble so I'd have the actual book, but I did end up buying the e-copy. And it's a great read. And like I said, if you're a baseball fan, which I would imagine you are if you're listening to this podcast, you'll definitely be able to comprehend and watch the game at a different level after reading this book. Jack, I appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us on the podcast for a second straight season, and good luck with the rest of the season with the Yes Network.
Ralphie, thanks for having me, and thanks for what you said at the end there. That's the greatest compliment that an author could receive. I appreciate it.
Thank you to Jack Curry for, again, being so generous with his time and his insights. We had a bit of an issue. We were supposed to tape it late last week, and I messed up royally because I have a new laptop that I'm doing the podcast on. and I forgot to install software that I need to record phone conversations when I do the phone interviews. And so I was scrambling, and I tried like five different methods. And then eventually, like I, you know, the allotted time that I had in Jack's schedule was gone, and he was kind enough to A, be patient with me, and B, quickly reschedule. So thank you again to Jack Curry for not only the great spot, but for his patience and professionalism, even when yours truly was not so much of a pro, didn't have my stuff in order. Yankees continuing this homestand. I'm going to go up to Connecticut this weekend to visit our friends at Mohegan Sun, so I will not be at Old Timers Day. Or the series against the Astros. I may see an old-timer or two up at Mohegan Sun. I don't think it's been publicly announced who's appearing there, so I'm not going to break that news here on the podcast. Nonetheless, it should be a good time, and maybe we'll have some cool guests for you over the next week or two here with the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Thanks for tuning in, and let's go Yankees.